Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
We got us a full week in store for us right now. And at this time next week, approximately, the president-elect, number 47, Donald J. Trump, is going to be sworn in. Inauguration set for the 20th of January. 1 week. Hard to believe that we're here. Man, oh man. Just seems like yesterday we were discussing, of course, the campaign and all of the doings there. But no, it's over. Let's get ready, baby. We're going to work. Can't come soon enough, in my view. By the way, where's Joe Biden? Where's he been?
Well, I mean, considering 40% of his term has been spent on vacation, you can flip a coin and pretty much figure out he's on vacation or he's asleep.
That's true. That's incredible. 40%. Good grief. I feel like we need to fire up the old, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Man, oh man. Meanwhile, out there in Los Angeles, high winds expected to return to the area tomorrow. The death toll up, latest number I saw, latest figure, 25 dead. Firefighters are trying to contain the wildfires. It looks like some containment has been achieved. 12,000 structures burned. Man, incredible. Totally incredible, much of which I think we'll find could have been avoided. You've probably seen that there at least is a commitment to rebuild these communities, multi-million dollar homes all over the place, burned to the ground. I found it interesting that Governor Gavin Newsom has relaxed many of the onerous regulations required to build anything in California, honestly. Like environmental impact statements and all that sort of stuff. I mean, seriously, you want to build a house in California, it may take twice as long to get approval to put a shovel in the ground than it does to actually construct the structure. This, to me, is failed policy. But he's relaxing those regulations. Why now? Because it's a little bit more urgent? Why didn't they do that before? Man, don't answer that, because we know that it's more about stuff that sounds good rather than is good. Is that kind of one way to describe it? And it doesn't sound good to me and you and most of our people, but to a lot of folks on that side of the political aisle. Oh, yeah, we're going to do environmental impact statements? Absolutely, all for it. Takes a year? Yes, absolutely. We got to do that. We can't put a shovel in the ground.
We got to make sure there's not some ladybug that only lives in your backyard.
That's exactly right. That is so true. So now, all of a sudden, I'm going to say they're woke, as in have awakened to the harm and the damage of these crazy policies. But I am concerned about the winds coming in, just based on all the things I've been reading. it won't be the 80 to 100-mile variety, but 30 to 50 mile per hour. 30 to 50 can move some stuff around, some flames around, and that's still a problem, big time. And meanwhile, up in Washington, first round of confirmation hearings get underway. This is going to be an eventful week on the Hill, to say the least. Would you agree there, Rhino? I mean, I think we're looking at a lot of fireworks. Think Pete Hegseth is up first. He, of course, the nominee for Secretary of Defense. That gets underway, if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow morning. Yeah. Members of the Senate will begin these hearings tomorrow. And that starts in the morning. And, of course, you got a number of others that are slated for their hearings as well. Wow. That's going to be something for sure. And I'm just curious as to what kind of heck the old Democrats are going to raise, in particular, on the nominee of Pete Hegseth. And
well, you can almost certainly guarantee that one of the louder mouths but lower IQs will accuse him of some ist or ism.
Oh, you know that's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. Pete Hegseth up first, though. That's what's on tap this week. I'm looking at trying to get the rest of the schedule. I had it just here a minute ago. Let me find it. But I know that Pam Bondi, I believe, she is also slated for her hearing. Four or five are going to be on the Hill. Yeah, here we go, as well this week. So eventful is an understatement, I would say. 10, yeah, here we go, 10 of the 15 cabinet roles going to be up on the Hill this week. That is a bunch. So it's going to be awfully busy up there for sure. Wow. We'll have a lot of fun with that. Meanwhile, here at home, tax cuts, tax reform, it feels like that's taking all the old air out of the Capitol, because there's a high degree of focus on that. Representative Trey Lamar, he chairs the House Ways and Means Committee. He, of course, responsible for tax policy in that committee capacity. He filed the bill, and note that it was styled as HB1. Not sure I've ever seen that before at the state level, meaning it is the highest priority in the state house this year, and that's full elimination of the income tax. And that's what folks are focused on for sure. And they're going to be talking about it down there. Now, lots of details, lots of nuances. The plan is to phase out the income tax beginning in 2027, tax year 2027. The income tax would be reduced to one bracket. Already we're there. We have one bracket in this year, 4.4% on all taxable income over $10,000. That based on the legislation enacted into law in 2022, which eliminated the 4% bracket and then phases out the 5% bracket, or phases it down is the better way to describe it, down to 4%. Starting in tax year 24, it went to 4.7. Tax year 25, our current year, 4.4. Next year, 4. And then if this legislation becomes law, based on the way it's currently drafted, we'd go to 3%. On all taxable income over $10,000 in 27. And then the subsequent years, we'd see a phase down of the income tax in increments of 0.3% for 10 years, finally landing at zero is the way it's drafted right now. Also, the 18.5% diversion of sales taxes to municipalities would end, meaning the state would keep the full 18.5%, and the cities would have a 1.5% sales tax layered on to the state sales tax on all commodities currently subject to the 7% sales tax. I'll explain that on the other side of the break. We're in the Element Well studio. It's a Monday, just getting started with middays. We've got Senator David Blunt joining middays at 11:05. You don't want to miss that interview. Coming right back.
All your glass
of middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
God, I see headlights. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers.
Welcome back, everyone. It is midday, so we were just talking about the big tax reform package. HB1, filed by Representative Trey Lamar, has full-throated support by Speaker of the House Jason White, also Governor Tate Reeves. They're the ones, of course, involved in the lawmaking process. Not really sure at this point where the Senate stands. Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman, of course, would be a huge factor in this. Senator Josh Harkins as well. And just reviewing the legislation, I'll share with you how this thing works. And also want to let you know that I had some questions this morning, having reviewed the measure, and I posed those directly to, offline, of course, I'm talking about, to Representative Trey Lamar, and he was gracious enough. I want to just give a shout-out to him to pick up the phone and call me this morning before we started the show and answer my questions directly. It was a very productive conversation, and I feel like at this point I have all the information necessary to share the plan with you and make sure you guys understand how this thing would work. And because there are lots of moving parts. It's taxes. Unfortunately, they're complicated. I'm all for simplifying it, and Lord knows what we have here at the state level is nothing compared to the atrocious tax code at the federal level. But again, in general, phase out the income tax over a 10-year period of time, beginning in tax year. Also, that would be, of course, the calendar year 27. You know, right now we are taxed at 4.4% of all taxable income north of $10,000. That is the second increment of three increments that reduce the 5% bracket down to 4% in accordance with the tax package passed in 2022. Year one, we eliminated the 4% bracket. Year two, three, four, of that package, phasing down the 5% bracket from 5 to 4. So in 2026, 4% of all your taxable income above $10,000 is the rate applied. If this bill were to become law in 27, that 4% rate would be reduced to 3%. So in 1 year, 1%. That's 25% reduction, if you will, of state income tax rate. You can, for the most part, extrapolate that as a loss of 25% of income tax revenue. But to some degree, you have to expect that's offset with an increase in sales tax revenue, not because of any rate to the state, because the rate to the state doesn't go up. The diversion would change, but simply because you've got more disposable income and you're spending it. That's a reasonable theory. How much you spend that generates sales taxes is somewhat speculative. Some people may spend that additional disposable income on investments, which are not subject to sales tax, paying debt off, buying non-taxable goods or services, buying goods or services such as vehicles that are subject to a lower rate. So that's the income tax part. Currently, you know, we have a 7% sales tax at the state level. Only two cities in the state of Mississippi have additional taxes, an additional layer of taxes on the general commodities that we buy that are subject to the 7% sales tax. That's Tupelo and Jackson. So we divert 18.5% of total sales taxes collected in the state, which right now sits at about $4 billion a year. That gets diverted to the tune of 18.5%, just means transferred back to the municipality where the transaction occurred, the retail transaction occurred that was taxed. That's a substantial part of revenue for municipalities, that plus the municipal portion of ad valorem taxes. That's how they get money to operate the cities. That's fire, police, roads, parks and rec, et cetera, but infrastructure, water infrastructure, that's where they get money. Two major sources, sales tax diversions, property taxes. It depends on the city, which exceeds the other. Just depends on the composition of the city and the overall just landscape of the city. So that's the plan is that the state would keep that 18.5% effective July 1, 2026. That would stay with the state, with the exception, this is something that I got clarification from Representative Lamar this morning on, with the exception of those goods and services that are taxed at a rate lower than the 7%. Vehicles, the most common transaction that people would be familiar with. Various farm commodities as well. The diversion would remain in place for those products, but the 1.5% local option, it's called an option because cities and counties in this situation would be able to opt out. The bill would mandate the 1.5% on cities and counties unless those local governments say, nope, we don't want to add that to our sales taxes. That can't imagine any of them doing that because they're losing the big diversion income. They're retaining some of it on the sale of vehicles and the sale of farm implements and other commodities. There's a long list of things in Mississippi that aren't subject to the full 7% sales tax. So that the cities would keep the diversion on those products and services taxed at a lower level. They would lose it on everything else that most of us buy every day that's taxed at the full 7%. But to substitute for that revenue, they would add 1.5% at the local and county option on everything that presently is taxed at that full 7%. And that would include groceries. That's the next major provision of the legislation, which would be to phase down the tax on groceries, sales tax on groceries, from the present 7% level down to 4%, then ultimately to 2.5%. However, the 1.5% local option would be layered on that. So we'd end up with, when it's fully implemented, that is the grocery sales tax, a 4% sales tax on groceries. So let's review. We eliminate the income tax over 10 years, beginning in 27. We end the diversion of general sales taxes, everything taxed at 7%, to the cities in July of 26. We add 1.5% local and county sales taxes to everything presently taxed at the full 7%, which would stay with the cities and counties. That's how they would replace the loss of the diversion, which for the most part means more money to cities and counties. You'd be hard to find a situation where that's not the case, especially since they're keeping the diversion on everything taxed at the lower level. I know it's a lot of data. I hope you're keeping up. So what does all this mean to you? And that there's other another provision as well, pardon me, that's tax-related, and that's fuel, which is presently subject to an excise tax. That's just a 18.4 cents per gallon of fuel purchased. What we do there is end the exemption of fuel purchases for sales tax purposes, and a new 5% sales tax would be applied to the purchase of fuel. All of those funds would stay with the state highway fund, just like excise taxes stay with the state highway fund. This is a way to get more revenue, that's the rationale here, to the Department of Transportation. Again, eliminate the income tax over 10 years, add 1.5% local and county sales taxes. This is what it means to you directly on everything currently subject to 7%. And then also add the 5% sales tax on fuel. Another major provision, which doesn't really affect your pocketbook, but to try to shore up the PERS fund, lottery proceeds, which currently go to the state highway fund, would be shifted to PERS, except instead of it being the first $80 million, it'd be the first $100 million of lottery proceeds going to the PERS program. Coming right back with more on taxes in the state of Mississippi.
Today, you're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We're in the Element Well studio. So another question that has come up, just that I've heard from business owners, want to know with this 1.5% local sales tax component, would you have to file multiple sales tax returns? Some states you do. You would file one for the state portion and one for the local and county portion, which would certainly increase the workload and the burden on businesses. And the answer to that is no. You would still file one sales tax return and remit to the Mississippi Department of Revenue, who would then distribute the monies accordingly to the local entities for their share. And that's the way it works now. You know, we have local options now, like I said, in Tupelo and in Jackson. And there's tourism tax and all sorts of other taxes in place in lots of municipalities where there's an additional sales tax component on restaurant food and lodging, for example. You still remit all that to the state tax commission, to the Department of Revenue. I'm still stuck in the olden days when we called it that, Rhino, the state tax commission. It's the Department of Revenue. And they would handle it from there. And if you look at the long form, I reviewed it this morning, by the way, just to make sure. If you look at the long form used, if you do it manually, for sales taxes, you'll see there's a number of categories of sales tax that are each designated with a category letter, if you will, like A through whatever. And when you file a return, you could be remitting for taxes collected across all those various categories. So, for example, in this case, with this 1.5% local option, you would have the 7% to the state and 1.5% to the city or county, depending on where your business is located. And so on the actual top form, which is the summary of the return itself, you just indicate that category. State, 7%, sales, times 7%, boom, here's how much I owe. City, here's the total sales, 1.5%, here's how much I owe. That's the way it works. So the good news is there, no change. And I did confirm this with Representative Lamar, and I actually suggested that he's going to talk to the Department of Revenue about it just to confirm, because that's the way the bill is written, that they understand that. And I suggested to him maybe we ought to make that a requirement, that the Department of Revenue has to process one single individual sales tax return from each business that is required to file sales taxes and remit sales taxes, and then they handle all the distribution from there. And then there's questions about what about your transaction systems, your point of sale systems, your accounting systems that handle the calculation of sales tax on purchases. I've worked with a number of different software platforms for decades, and I've yet to see one that couldn't accommodate this. They all allow multiple layers of sales tax. A lot of folks also use third-party products that integrate. Avalara is the one that comes to mind, integrate directly into accounting systems. Granted, there's a cost for that. But the benefit of those tools is they not only handle all the complexities of calculating sales taxes when the sale is processed, and it knows the zip codes and the commodities being sold and all that sort of stuff, but also handles the filing of tax returns for their subscribers. So, and I'm not suggesting people run out and do that. There is a cost associated with that. I found the cost to really be offset, invaluable in that the expenses associated with doing manual sales tax calculation and returns was easily offset by the cost of the tool to handle that for you. And I recognize that a lot of smaller businesses, it's cost prohibitive for them. I don't remember what the prices are. But no matter, if you've just got standard point of sale system, even highly tailored and customized systems for your type of business, I think you'll find that they have a configuration setting that allows multiple layers of sales tax. Have to, because every state in the country basically has that. You wouldn't. It would be. They would not be usable if that weren't the case. The other little bit of nuance is that the first $80 million presently of lottery proceeds currently go to the state highway fund. As we indicated in the last segment, a change would be made based on this legislation so that the first $100 million, okay, the first $100 million produced in a year from the Mississippi Lottery Corporation would be transferred to the public employees retirement system. So we'd go from 80 to state highway fund to $100 million to the public employees retirement system. That, of course, is designed to stabilize the PERS fund, which you know as a $25 billion unfunded liability. And Based on what I can tell, that will continue until such time as the fund is considered actuarially sound. And there are three major metrics for determining that. One in particular, the goal is to get to about 80%. I think currently we're sitting at around 50%. It varies somewhat. It's dynamic just based on investment returns and other factors. But in general, we're behind where we need to be, what's considered stable and solvent. And so the transfer of this money out of the lottery proceeds is designed to address that issue. The lottery generates about $122 million in the first 5 years it's been in existence. Annually, again, the first $80 million to roads and bridges historically, and the remaining 40 go to the Educate, 40 plus, the excess has been about $40 million to the Education Enhancement Fund. Under this program, by the way, the first $100 million would go to the PERS program, and then the excess would be split between the Education Enhancement Fund and multimodal transportation infrastructure, ports, for example. So it's a little bit of a different situation, scenario. The 5% sales tax on fuel, that's thought to generate about $400 million a year that would go directly to the Mississippi Department of Transportation. Of course, they're losing the $80 million from the lottery. So you can kind of do the math there under this program, under this plan. So I hope that that gives you at least a high-level picture of what this program looks like. It's something that Representative Lamar and Speaker of the House Jason White have been working on diligently for some time, in particular Representative Lamar. And guys, this goes back to 22 when we first started seeing a concerted effort to eliminate the income tax. You remember we talked about that extensively and had Speaker of the House Philip Gunn on multiple times, as well as Representative Lamar, and of course folks from the Senate as well. And their very first bill, I've talked about it many times, this looks somewhat like that, in that we're increasing sales tax revenue, but we're phasing out the income tax. The difference here is we're doing this, I would say, a little bit more responsibly, in that the income tax is being phased out over an extended period of time. Whereas, as you recall, Rhino, that was, let's hit the streets right now, we're going to raise sales taxes. And by the way, that included raising sales taxes on everything, not just that which was subject to the 7%. And that drew lots of objection, I think it's fair to say. It was actually stronger than just objection, but certainly from those in the industries that currently receive a carve-out, if you will, whose goods and services are taxed at a lower level, in particular our agriculture industry that pays lower sales taxes on a lot of stuff they buy. Vehicles, manufactured housing, logging, those are the big ones that come to mind, and that certainly most consumers other than farmers would encounter, in particular the vehicles. But again, I repeat, the additional 1.5% local tax would not be added to any present goods and services taxed below the 7% rate in Mississippi today. Would only apply to those goods and services we currently purchase that are subject to the full 7%. Can't say that enough, because that's a big question that's been coming up. Also, this local option is really kind of not an option. I'm still referring to it in that way, because in the past that's required a referendum. Wouldn't. And in fact, it would require an opt-out by county and local leaders, an opt-out. Otherwise, it's going into effect. It's very similar to the medical marijuana law. Coming right back, we got David Blunt, the senator from Jackson, on at 11:05.
Be sure.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher.
Ah, yes, the great Jim Morrison. Departed the surly bonds of earth way too soon. Wonder what he'd be saying about his beloved Los Angeles. Man.
Well, the house where this song was written, ironically, burned down in the fire.
Really?
Yeah. That was reported over the weekend.
Dang. Well, of course, all of this is tragic. But his historical significance there is, you know, is kind of saddening. That's can't replace that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can't replace. I'm certainly sensitive to that. When my wife's childhood home, the home that her mother was living at, her father had already passed away. It's Katrina on the coast. I mean, it was wiped out, of course, block off the beach there. And, you know, something that really upset her was the loss of her father's decorations from World War II, including the Distinguished Flying Cross. And I will say that kudos to Congressman Michael Guest's office. Actually helped us replace that. Took a while, as you can imagine, working through all that. And, you know, you've got to do some work to authenticate that. But we're appreciative for that. But it's certainly not like the original. And all of that, you know, you never think about it. It was just like in a jewelry-type box, you know, all his various medals. And that upset her. And you can understand that. I mean, her dad was essentially a war hero, World War II. And that's just kind of symbolic of lots of losses people have. Of course, nothing compares to the loss of life. I would kind of put live animals behind that, honestly. And that, you don't think about the displacement of the live animals and as the fires ravage the landscape. Not just pets, but animals in general. And I have seen reports. I mean, there are still a lot of good people in this country and in this world of folks braving the blazes to go release horses. There are lots of right. You've seen this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the various organizations that are involved in rescuing pets and taking care of them. I'm certainly not placing them above people. But they're God's creatures, and they deserve to be taken care of as well. But the whole thing is just a total tragedy, and I think in many ways avoidable. That remains to be seen for sure. It certainly doesn't help when you see all these people running the show in the fire department, the mayor, the governor, who just certainly seem to be highly incompetent. And when you're prioritizing things other than capabilities and qualifications and experience and value proposition and in hiring, and you've essentially established just top down policy. We're going to hire this many of this type and this many of this type without concern for their qualifications. You end up with substandard outcomes, and that applies to our federal government, our public sector, and regrettably, our private sector, though many of them have seen the error of their ways. And they are dissolving and abandoning such policies. Back here at home, I haven't checked out the text line. What do folks have to say about this discussion of taxes here? Let's see, I'll go back to the beginning. Yeah, Barry and Golden says an entire ocean at their disposal and no one has a plan to utilize that water for fire control, emergency use only. I'm not an expert on this, but there's something about the salt content of the ocean water, right, that's a problem for fighting fires.
Yes and no. I mean, salt water and metal don't mix, and there's a lot of metal parts in a lot of the firefighting equipment because the salt water can corrode the metal, but that's a long-term issue that can be remedied with proper maintenance to the point where the water planes that have come down from Canada are making dozens of trips to the ocean to pick up water to drop it. they're totally fine with using it. It's something about the Coastal Commission or the California state government. It's a suggestion. I don't know that it's a hard and fast rule, but it's suggested not to use salt water because of the damage it can cause to the equipment, and you're putting salt onto otherwise fertile ground that could potentially make it infertile or harm the wildlife or all this other kind of nonsense.
But yeah,
it would seem like in the event of an emergency, you would get any water you could get your hands on.
Makes sense to me. On the ceasefire text line, imagine for a moment, if you will, these fires were in Jackson. Now envision this nightmare scenario. You have the eminently qualified and incompetent mayor, you have the low IQ deranged city council, and then you have the career criminal politician Benny Thompson. These are the losers that we have to depend on. Yeah, it's kind of a scary thought. And look, I don't think anybody can be prepared for anything of this scale. The real issue is, could it been prevented so you don't have this? Coming right back with...
Of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher.
And now, the talk that keeps Mississippi talking.
That's what I like to listen to.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays. It's hour two of the program. We're pleased to welcome now Senator David Blunt. He represents District 29, serves as the chairman of the Senate Gaming Committee and vice chair of the Senate Education Committee. Senator Blunt, good to see you. Thanks for coming on. All right. I think we're trying to get back in touch with him. We hope to make that connection here pretty soon. Appreciate that. We'll continue on the ceasefire text line. You got a category, food from healthy to unhealthy, and sales tax accordingly. This is on the ceasefire text line. Fruits, veggies, proteins, catch the break, high sugars, fats, and snacks stay the same. Gives government subsidies, insurance a break in the long run. Helps with diabetes and heart disease. Kind of like tobacco and alcohol are taxed. Sounds like the tax structure in New York. All right, we got the senator. Senator Blunt, you there, sir?
I am. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. So you guys been in session now for a little while, about a week. What's on your radar this year?
Well, things are moving in a hurry. You know, we've only been in session since last Tuesday, and the first deadline is the day after tomorrow. So things are moving quickly. I would say there are a lot of ambitious plans. This session, some of them good, some of them not so good, in my opinion. But things are going to get moving, I think, this week. We saw on Friday, House released a plan to eliminate the income tax. We've still got hopefully a Medicaid to deal with, TANF to deal with, public education to deal with. So it's going to be a busy session.
What do you think about this proposal from the House to eliminate the income tax, phase that in over 10 years? We've been talking about that this morning. You're aware that Representative Trey Lamar filed that bill, HB1. Speaker of the House Jason White, also a proponent. What are your thoughts, Senator?
I think we all know that since COVID and under the Biden administration with ARPA and the Infrastructure Act, that the state has seen an unprecedented amount of federal spending, and that money's going away. And revenue in the state is declining. Revenue in just about every state in the country is declining now that COVID and those federal programs have phased out. And I think it is irresponsible in the long-term interest of the state to eliminate one-third of the state budget. It's a little more than $2 billion a year, the income tax. And you know, we've got needs in this state with infrastructure. We've got needs in the retirement system. We know that one-time federal money is going away, and I don't think we need to eliminate the income tax.
Okay. So have you, as the state economist, or have you been apprised from the state economist of any sort of longer-term projections, any pro formas that would reflect what you're talking about specifically?
Well, in terms of the revenue decline for this year, the most recent report from the budget office shows that we're down about $100 million,
yep.
or a little less than 3% from where we were last year. This is what every state is seeing right now. And so we need to be cautious. I mean, you know, the previous governor, Phil Bryant, twice was forced to make mid-year budget cuts when money didn't come in. The Republican governor before that, Haley Barbour, twice was forced to make mid-year budget cuts when the money didn't come in. The money that's in the bank right now is one-time surplus money that was driven in large part by federal spending. We need to spend that on one-time uses, and we've done that in a bipartisan way on infrastructure and state parks and other things. But to eliminate one-third of the budget is just, it's not what we ought to do, in my opinion. I think we need to, particularly the sales tax. If we're going to have a tax cut, that ought to be the grocery tax. But if you, I think about the folks I represent in South Hinds County in the Terry area, if you drive back and forth to work 40, 50 miles round trip, and the state's now going to ask you to pay more for your gas, they're going to increase your sales taxes when you buy things that aren't groceries, and you're going to get an income tax, but you're not paying that much money in income tax anyway if you're retired or making $40,000 or $50,000 a year. It's not what we need to do. We need to deal with infrastructure because we're going to have to pay for this ourselves now. The federal government's not doing that anymore. We need to deal with the retirement system because we've got about a $25 billion unfunded liability there. And we all agree that we need a new tier, a new benefit structure for new hires. But that by itself is not going to solve the problem with the retirement system. It is going to take money. And that's what we need to be focused on.
I got you. So do you think that the state highway fund needs more money? Do you think we need more funds into the Department of Transportation to handle our capacity and maintenance needs? I'm sure
yes.
You've seen that Commissioner Willie Simmons, the executive director, Brad White, the other commissioners have all been lobbying for this.
Yes, I think we do.
Okay. So the 5%, I guess I'm confused because you seem to indicate that you oppose the 5% sales tax on fuel, which would in fact add, it's estimated, about $400 million a year to the state highway fund. But you say that we need more money to the state highway fund. So where would we get that?
The income tax.
Okay. So
the income tax would help. The income tax would help with that. If the legislature went home today, we would see $184 million in new tax cuts go into effect this year because the tax cuts we've already passed haven't even fully taken effect yet.
Well, that is correct. The estimates, according to I'm looking at the Department of Revenue's recent report. I'm sure you've seen it from December. What I'm looking at, it reflects that we're $80 million below estimate. For the month, it was $100 million, but fiscal year-to-date, we're $80 million. That's largely due to the decline in corporate C-Corp income taxes. I think it's a function of corporations taking advantage of the immediate expensing provisions we lined up with the federal government on and recently passed into law.
Well,
so,
it just seems to me that the economy is slowing down. Things the federal money is not coming, and the prudent thing to do is wait and not increase taxes. I say that I want to tax vaping products like cigarettes, but other than that, we don't need to increase taxes, and we need to wait and meet these obligations before we and try to digest what has just happened with all this federal spending that's come to us in the last 2 or 3 years.
Gotcha. All right, so I'll put you down as a nay on this plan. You want to keep taxes where they are, or would you be in favor of raising income taxes?
I would not be in favor of raising income taxes. I would be in favor of taxing vaping products, and that's it. But let me say this.
You know, okay.
When the Republicans took over the House a few years ago, they passed a rule, which doesn't really work, but I think it's a correct rule.
Okay.
That says if you're going to increase spending, you have to show where the money's going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Well, The flip side of a rule like that would be, if you're going to cut taxes, you need to show where the cut's going to come from. Because you just can't magically say, without a fiscal note or a report from state economists or anything, that everything's going to be fine and growth's going to take care of everything.
Yeah.
If you want to cut revenue, fine. Show me where your cut's going to be. Show me what in the state budget, in the legislative budget recommendation that came out in December, are you going to cut education? Are you going to cut highways? Are you going to cut state parks, criminal justice? You want to reduce the budget? Show me where your cut's going to be. That's what we ought to do. And that everybody wants to pay less taxes. But these services that people rely on are going to increasingly be borne by the state. And we've got bills to pay. And we've got a retirement system to shore up. And that's what we ought to do.
So you're aware that the current budget, if revenues come in as planned and spending is level with what budgeted, that we would generate a significant surplus. Do you think any of that, because I don't find this, is any of that a function of supplemental COVID money this year coming into the state?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I think it's a lot of that is a 98% rule, which is a prudent thing to do. Spend 98% of your projected revenue. And then we do have a lot of money in the bank, and that's true.
Yeah.
But all the work that was done in every city and county in this state over the last few years for important infrastructure projects was paid for with federal money.
Right.
And in a couple of years, that money's not going to be there.
Yeah.
And people are going to come to the state and want to, they want to deal with drainage issues and street issues and all the other things that every member of the legislature got for his or her district. That's going to become a state responsibility. And so we need to be ready for that. And then we need to begin to pay down the unfunded liability in the retirement system. And we need to also do what I think the number one priority for the Mississippi Economic Council is we need to dramatically increase our funding for workforce training.
Okay. You got to go. You can hang around with us.
I can do another segment.
Okay, great. We got Senator David Blunt on the line with us. He chairs the Senate Gaming Committee. Want to talk about mobile sports betting and a proposal you have about our statues in Washington, D.C. We're coming right back, folks.
If you're feeling anxious about your investments with all the economic volatility and chaos in Washington, tune in to Super Talk Jackson on Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. and Sundays from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. for Element Wealth Radio with Jeremy Nelson. Learn more at myelementwealth.com.
When the storm hits and the roof over your head is the only thing between your family and the elements outside, you need someone you can trust. At Watkins Construction and Roofing, we've been there for families like yours, always ready to keep you safe and protected. Whether it's a small repair or a complete replacement, we're always there for you. Watkins Construction and Roofing. Trust, the beginning of what we build. 601-966-8233 or nomoreroofleak.com.
Hey, this is Will with Service Specialist. Are you looking for new employees? Spending hours searching recruitment sites? For over 50 years, Service Specialist has been connecting hard-to-find qualified candidates for employers. We have candidates for all your administrative, professional, manufacturing, and industrial needs. Check us out online at ServiceSpecialistLTD.com. That's ServiceSpecialistLTD.com. Service Specialist, your expert recruiters helping employers and job candidates connect since 1967.
Service Specialist with offices in Ridgeland, Canton, Oxford, and now open in Columbus.
Hello, I'm Gary Jolly from the Tractor Store. LS Tractor understands your passion for the land, and just like you, LS Tractor is committed to excellence and superior products. LS Tractor comes with a long list of standard features that are unmatched by other brands and backed with the LS commitment to provide exceptional customer service and satisfaction. You get a lot more for your money with the LS Tractor. Come to the Tractor Store in Richland to experience the LS difference. The Tractor Store in Richland.
Your window tint headquarters at Auto Trim Designs on Highway 80 in Pearl is now also your best source for the lasting protection of Expel paint protection film. Your car is too precious to fail to protect it from bugs, rocks, and road debris. For more info, go to autotrimdesigns.com.
Catfish, hush puppies, and fried dill pickles. For a flipping good time, come down to Cock of the Walk.
Proud to be celebrating our 45th anniversary. Voted the best catfish, cornbread, and sweet tea in Mississippi. And don't forget the greens and coleslaw, too. Introducing our new entree, fried and grilled shrimp. With locations on the Reservoir, Pocahontas, and 1 mile from the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee.
For a flipping good time, come down to Cock of the Walk.
I like chicken.
I like fish.
I like hush puppies.
I love it. Catfish is excellent.
For a flipping good time, come down to Cock of the Walk.
Maloney Overhead Door is new to the greater Jackson area, but we've been serving North Mississippi families and businesses for over three generations. We're your local experts for all your garage door needs, residential and commercial garage door service, installation, repair, and emergency services, plus dock equipment sales and service, gate operator repair and replacement, and more. Experience the difference with Maloney Overhead Door of Greater Jackson. Call us today for a free quote, 601-612-0850. Maloney Overhead Door, quality service for three generations.
Arm yourself with everything you need to take on your day. Wake up with Gallo tomorrow on 97.3 FM. Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
We are back with you in the Element Well studio. Senator David Blunt is our guest. So, Senator, just looking at the official document published by the Legislative Budget Office, it does reflect that if we were to produce revenue consistent with the sine-die projection, we'd generate roughly a $600 million surplus this year. And, of course, we already have $2.5 billion in the various funds and reserves, if you will.
Right.
Do you not feel like we should provide some form of tax relief to the taxpayers, given that we're able to produce surpluses, or would you prefer to see us appropriate that money and spend it on other programs and in other ways?
I think it's one-time money and should be spent on one-time uses. I would first.
But I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's not. It's not one-time money, right? Because you just confirm we're not receiving in this fiscal year any outsized supplemental augmented revenues from the federal government.
I'm sorry. I thought you asked me about the money in the bank.
No. I apologize. I'm talking about the surplus this year. The surplus we're generating this year. I'm looking more at the income side of the equation than the balance sheet side. I'm talking about the surplus.
Well, we should appropriate 98% of whatever the revenue is
okay.
for the upcoming year.
Okay.
And if we don't appropriate 98%, I mean, the purpose. I mean, we need to have a reserve fund, obviously, and that's why it's prudent to only appropriate 98% of the money. But there's a lot of needs out there. That if we're not appropriating money, I mean, again, I go back to workforce training. We had a very impressive meeting with Hines Community College, and I'm sure this is true at community colleges across the state. They have programs that can put people in the high-paying jobs. I'm not even talking about a traditional AA program. Job training programs where they cannot hire staff because folks can make more money in the private sector, mm-hmm. and they don't have some of the equipment necessary to put to provide the training that they need because they haven't been funded to the way they need to be funded for workforce training. We should do that. We should have maximized our community college workforce training funding, and if we've got extra money, that's a good thing to do with it.
Right. I'm all for that, but we also need job creation. We got to have the jobs for these highly trained people to work, and right now, as you know, many of them leave the state before the ink's dry on their diploma. And we're funding that. We're essentially subsidizing the other states. I would argue that this is a way to attract new capital investment and business expansion into the state to create those jobs that these highly trained and skilled people could work with higher incomes.
I think we've got a very low workforce participation rate, and the way to raise that rate is to increase the skills of our people who live here.
Okay.
And that's what our community colleges are for.
Got a question for you about the workforce participation rate. Are you familiar with how that's calculated?
I think it's all the people who are alive of working age.
Right. It's everybody that's older than 18.
Well, I mean,
that are alive.
Of working age, yes.
Nope.
And so,
nope.
Obviously,
nope. I'm not of working age. If I quit today, I'd be considered not participating in the labor force. That's how it's calculated. And I don't need to work. I got plenty of money. But let me ask you this. Have you ever been called by the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
No, I haven't.
Do you know anybody that's ever been called?
No one's ever said that to me.
Right. I would challenge you to ask that question on the floor
of the Mississippi State Senate. I can tell you what the answer is going to be, because I've asked this in numerous speaking engagements. Nobody will raise their hand. I don't know how the BLS comes up with this number. I've yet to find a person who's ever been called.
Well, and I'm sure it's an imperfect measurement, and I'm sure you're right, but I also think if I ask anybody up here that says, do we have enough people working in this state, the answer is going to be no.
Have you ever asked any of those people why they're not working?
I think there are different reasons. I think they don't have skills. I think some of them don't have, well, I don't need to get into that.
I got you. Fair enough.
I think giving people skills to make a good income is what our community colleges can do, and if we gave them more money, they could do more of it.
I got you. All right, so what about mobile sports betting? You know, that got passed in the House last year. It didn't get anywhere in your committee in the Senate. Do you think that's coming up again, and how do you stand on that?
I'm where I am last year on that. I don't know if there will be a Senate bill. I don't remember if we had a Senate bill, but we certainly got a bill from the House. It did pass last year. So if they send us a bill, we'll look at it. Okay. I think the issues are sort of as they have been, that some casinos are for it and some casinos are against it.
Okay.
I have always seen the gaming industry in the state, the reason we have gaming in the state is for tourism, to bring new people to the state, to encourage investment in the form of hotels and amenities and things like, you know, to grow the economy of the state and to support, you know, the jobs, the tens of thousands of people who work in these jobs, either directly or indirectly, and all of that's a good thing, and I want to support that, and I don't want to do anything to endanger that.
Okay.
Mobile sports betting doesn't do any of that. Mobile sports betting does not drive tourism. It does not drive any economic investment in our state, and casinos have different opinions about whether or not it is good for jobs and people who work in this industry. So that may change this year, but if we get a bill in the Senate, you know, I'm going to be looking at it. The thing I am going to be focused on in the Gaming Committee is working with our Secretary of State and dealing with the Tidelands issues that have arisen on the Gulf Coast. I think it's important that one thing Mississippi's done right is keep our gaming laws and regulations consistent, regardless of who the governor is or who's on the Gaming Commission or who's in the legislature. You know, the rules have been consistent, and that's what we need to encourage further investment on the Gulf Coast. There have been some developments on the commission side and in the courts that throw that into question. So we're going to be looking at that this year on the Senate side.
Okay. What about, let's turn our attention to, I believe, a bill, if I'm not mistaken, you're the principal author of, right? And that's to change who represents us in Statuary Hall in the Capitol.
Yes, I did do that. You may know that every state in the country has two statues in Statuary Hall. Mississippi's two statues are Jefferson Davis and J.Z. George. I just think if you asked anybody in Mississippi who are the two greatest Mississippians our state has produced, that they would not say Jefferson Davis and J.Z. George. So this is something that I think the public needs to weigh in on, and the model for that legislation is what we did with the state flag. The legislature is not going to decide. I'm not going to decide. Let's involve the public. Let's put a commission out there. Let's hear what people have to say and find out who are the best two representatives of our state. Arkansas recently changed theirs from two people I'd never heard of and replaced them with Daisy Bates and Johnny Cash. And, you know, I think that sounds pretty good. And we've got a lot of great people in this state, a lot of talented folks over the years, and we need to identify those two people because I think we could do better than Jefferson Davis and J.Z. George.
I see. Okay. What about something else that you know that's going to be coming up, certainly on the House side for sure, is enhancing the school choice provisions in the state. Where do you stand on what's being talked about there?
I'm not really clear on what they have in mind, but I think about my district.
Okay.
If I have a child and a family who lives in South Jackson, and that child wants to go to Clinton or Madison Central or Northwest Rankin, are they going to be able to go?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, you know, we need to think through that from what's impact on JPS, but also what impact it may have on Northwest Rankin or Madison Central or Clinton. But if the answer is no, then I don't really know what we're talking about.
Okay.
I mean, if you have a if the theory is that a child, a home district of a child cannot retain that child, but the receiving district has to accept that child, and again, thinking about that family in South Jackson that I represent, if that's an empty promise, and we pass that bill, and that child wants to go to Clinton, say, or Northwest Rankin, and they say, well, I'm sorry, Johnny, you know, we just don't have room for you. We're full up here. We got more than we can handle. Then I don't really know what we've accomplished. I also am concerned that if districts can make up their own rules about who they take and who they don't take, that you're going to see the transfer portal in high school sports. So I just want to see specifically what's being proposed, and I want to make sure that if we say we're doing something, we're really doing it.
Okay. Well, but it sounds like you could be in favor of some sort of reasonable public-to-public choice option.
Well, certainly I want to say from the beginning that if we're talking about special needs students who have a legitimate special need and can go to a school that is can service that need, absolutely we need to do that.
But we have that now, right?
The home district still has to let that student go. So if they do not, then that student cannot go.
I got
you. If there's a program for your child's specific disability at the neighboring district, then by all means, you should be able to access that program.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. But I've heard different things as it relates to school choice. And if that child in South Jackson cannot go to a different school because the neighboring school district can say, we're not going to take you, or we're not going to take you unless you rush for 500 yards last year, or whatever their category is, then I just think it's an empty promise.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be seeing what develops there and hope to talk to you again soon about that. Senator David Blunt, thanks for coming on.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
You got it. We're coming right back, folks, in the Element Well studio.
Bring it on!
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on!
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Element Well Studio, we appreciate you being with us today. It's a short show, of course, at 12:05. It's Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors. Well, I just feel like, Rhino, this is another one of those days where, with the legislature being in session, all the stuff happening up there in Washington, we need more time. But we will certainly continue on and then, of course, be back with you again tomorrow. When the legislature's in session, and we talked about it this morning in our meeting, like several hundred bills already filed, right?
They wasted drinking from the fire hydrant already.
No time, and making them laws, or at least bills, to become law. What are the chances that any of those actually become law as is? As is. Depends on the
very few will make it through as is.
I mean, maybe changing the name on a building or something like that. But the more comprehensive and complex legislation, I would say, no chance. But that's fine. That's the way the process works. But right now, no doubt, all eyes are focused in the House, it appears, on this tax reform legislation. That's where all the attention is going for sure. On the C Spire text line, Gerard, with a gradual rollback of income tax over 10 years and making up for the deficit with a sales tax on gas, wouldn't individuals essentially be paying more tax over the course of the rollback of the income tax until it's eliminated? So the first thing we got to point is the inaccuracy of your statement there, that the sales tax on gas does not replace income tax. The sales tax proposed on fuel would go, motor fuels is literally how the legislation defines it, goes to the state highway fund. That's completely separate than the general fund, which is which receives revenue, and its funding sources come from income taxes, sales taxes, premium, insurance premium taxes, and some other assorted fees, corporate taxes. So the tax, the sales tax on fuel, let me be clear about this, would not be included as a source of revenue for spending in the general fund. It goes directly to the state highway fund, just as the present excise taxes on fuel do. That's where the Department of Transportation derives a major part of its revenue. It comes from fuel taxes, matching federal dollars under the various programs, some various fees paid also by transportation entities. And then now, should this become law, this new 5% sales tax component. Just want to make sure that it is clear. And I will also say that I feel like I'm back in 22, Rhino. I had to resurrect the old model that I created back then to plug in individuals' details. And we had several, you recall, on the show that supplied their information, their data. And we plugged it in, and of course, without revealing their names, we wouldn't do that, but just plugged it in so they'd know how it would affect them. So if you think about this, the idea is that you have no income tax, so to do your own little math calculation of how this would affect you, look at your tax return and figure out how much state income tax you paid last year. Now, I don't mean had to pay to make up for the underpayment throughout the year. I mean the total income tax liability, the amount you paid the state of Mississippi. So just put that at zero. Now, if you could think about what the amount is of a dollar value amount of groceries you purchased. So multiply that by 7%. And then multiply it again by 4%, and the difference is how much you're saving on the purchase of groceries. Then think about everything else you buy subject to the full 7% sales tax today. Keep in mind that a lot of what you spend your disposable income on is not subject to sales tax. Your mortgage, your rent, your insurance, anything you invest. Also, keep in mind that, no, I don't want to get into that. That would complicate it. But that's mainly energy, for example. Gas, not subject to sales tax. Energy, electric power, gas to your house, not subject. All right, so take away your income tax. Reduce your sales tax on groceries from 7 to 4, whatever your savings are there. But then add back new taxes, the 1.5%. of whatever you're buying now that is subject to the full 7% outside of groceries and outside, well, doesn't apply to gas because you don't pay that now. So the 1.5%, and then add to that 5% of what you think you spend annually on fuel, gas or diesel. So it's those three numbers, zero for income taxes, or you could put in what you're currently paying for income taxes. If you wanted to do it that way in a formula is the way that would work. And then subtract from it the amount you're going to pay on grocery purchases, fuel purchases. I've done some calculations. I took a person with $60,000 of gross income. I figured they spend $8,000 a year on non-grocery purchases. It could be different, I admit that. I just used that as an example. Grocery purchases of $6,000, fuel purchases at $1,500. So they would pay $1,668 present day of income taxes, and they would pay an additional $120 a year on non-grocery purchases. They would also save $180 on grocery purchases, pay $75 a year more on fuel purchases. Net savings for a single filer who makes $60,000 a year, $1,653. So, look, everybody's situation's different. I certainly acknowledge that, but plug that into your own model. How much do you pay on taxes now? Income taxes we're talking about. How much more you're going to pay for non-grocery purchases, less how much you're going to save on grocery purchases, plus how much more you're going to pay on fuel purchases. If you add all that up, that's what calculates your net. So I think 99% of the cases out there are going to realize a tax savings. Retirees could be a special situation because they presently pay no income taxes. Therefore, they would not incur any benefit from elimination of the income tax. However, I think it'd be pretty close that the increase in sales taxes on non-grocery items and the increase in sales taxes on fuel would be about the same as the decrease in sales taxes on groceries. Do you think that works out right on the typical retiree household, that the amount of new taxes on fuel plus the amount of new taxes on non-grocery items is about the same as the savings they would incur on the reduction of the grocery sales tax? I mean, it just depends on how you spend your disposable income. I get it. I would think that in a lot of households, retirees, that they probably spend more on groceries, honestly, than, wouldn't you think, than they do the combination of fuel at 5% and non-grocery items at now 8.5%. So, if you know, the more spent on groceries in your disposable income relative to those other two categories, the more the lines cross in your favor, essentially. So you're going to save money on groceries, pay a little bit more on non-groceries, pay a little bit more on fuel. I estimated $1,500 a year on fuel. You think that's about right? It's probably high.
But yeah, probably a little high.
I tried to use an average, you know, to be fair and conservative in the estimate, because and that would, at 5%, it's $75 a year. That's how much more you're paying on fuel. But if you spent $6,000 a year on grocery, you're saving $180 because you're saving 3%. If you spent $8,000 on non-grocery, you're incurring a 1.5% increase of sales taxes. There's $120. So you could do other examples and scenarios for sure and come up with different outcomes, but I'm willing to bet that the vast majority of people out there would incur tax savings from this plan. This is not a dollar-for-dollar so-called tax swap. This is a bona fide plan that saves your overall taxes and decreases your tax burden. Coming back with final segment. Stay with us.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
We are back in the Element Well studio. So one of the questions is, will the shipping company add the 5% to the goods they deliver? Talking about the 5% sales tax on fuel as proposed. Well, the price of fuel goes up, and I can tell you that shippers actually have an agreement with their customers where they have this adjustment based on fuel prices that they pass on to their customers. So, honestly, the 5% sales tax is the least of their worries with respect to volatile fuel prices. Rhino, as you know, we're watching, by the way, fuel today. You've seen this? $81 a barrel today. Wasn't too long. You and I were in this studio celebrating it getting down to $65 a barrel. And it's kind of stayed below 70 for an extended period of time, $81 today. Fuel's going up, there ain't no doubt. Now, I'm hoping the president gets in there and gets his legislation, and in particular his executive orders passed that have essentially just attacked the fossil fuels industry. But I'll say again, I'm not convinced that that means at least the big oil and gas companies, the big energy companies, are going to rush out and start exploring and producing more oil. That being said, there are a number of small oil and gas producers that currently are subject to ridiculously onerous Biden administration regulations. And I do think that rolling those back could have a positive impact on those smaller organizations, and thus I hope that means an increase in supply, and that drives the price down. But that can't come soon enough, especially with the Dow. It's up today slightly, started out in the negative. The NASDAQ still getting killed. That's because 10-year notes are up again, really approaching the 5% level for the 10-year, and that affects your mortgages, which you're now looking at being close to, if not right at, 7% for the standard 30-year. So it's going in the opposite direction, and I believe that's because the Fed has totally bumbled monetary policy. I still believe that, and I think we're all paying the price for that. So, no, they're not going to have like this additional line item is the answer to the question. That when shippers, they consider their more aggregate total costs of delivery. And if you think about most of the stuff we all buy that gets delivered to us, it comes from the big-time national shippers. And, yes, price of fuel, very volatile. And they try the best they can incorporate that into their model. Let's see. Wouldn't a retiree support this legislation because it's a benefit for their children and grandchildren, says Thomas in Greenwood. Thomas, get in the real world. I would hope so. Sure. And I talked about this 2 years ago. But I know this from business experience. Anytime you make major changes in almost anything that affects people, whether it's in a business or it's in the statewide tax structure, my experience is just the way human beings are wired, and Rhino, you may have a different or similar take. What people want to know, first and foremost, paramount, most of all, what does this mean to me?
What's in it for me?
That's just how we're wired. I don't consider that to be a fault or a flaw, but the reality is all these people that are retired, they built their household budgets and their standard of living around what they know. People, generally speaking, resist change. And the older we get, the more resistant we become to change. That being said, I really believe if retirees work with us here, they'll find, just as I said in the last segment, that the increase in the general sales tax and the decrease in the grocery sales tax offset. I get it. Ending the income tax doesn't mean squat to you. You're not paying income tax on that now. But I think if you take a hard look at your household finances and do the best you can to determine how much do you spend on stuff that's subject to that 7% sales tax, how much do you spend on groceries, add 1.5% to the former and subtract 3% from the latter, and see what the net is. I think you'll find you net really close to zero. And that's why I think this is a good plan. Let's see. Could you figure that model with the average income of a state employee? I could. I'd have to look up what the average income of a state employee is. I can tell you, I did. If you listen to me and heard me in the last segment, I didn't mean to say listen. That sounds condescending. My apologies there. But if you heard me talking about this in the last segment, gross income $60,000, based on what I estimated you would spend on groceries, non-grocery purchases, and fuel purchases, net savings of $1,653. That's for an individual. It would be a little less. Everything stayed the same if this was a couple a married couple that filed joint because their income taxes would be lower.
Average annual salary for a state employee in the Magnolia State is $54,186.
So it's a little less than what I just told you. A little less. We're out of here today. Thanks so much for joining us. That's $1,653, by the way. Coming right. Oh, no, we're coming in tomorrow. Stay safe and God bless.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.